welcome to a special bonus episode of Series 5 of our podcast series, How I Grew My Brand. In this episode, we want to do something a bit different by having a conversation with Piper's very own founder, Crispin Tweddle. My name is Yasha Stryker, and as Piper's head of brand, I work closely with Crispin in unpicking what makes brands better and different. This episode will give you an insight into how we think about brand building at Piper and how we help our brands become valuable brand legends. Much more on that later. Alongside starting Piper in 1985, Crispin has also co-founded Pitcher & Piano, Turtle Bay, and Woodlands Dairy. And I'm sure there have been many others. Welcome, Crispin.
Thank you.
So how many businesses have you actually started in your life?
Oh, that's impossible. You go right back to being a schoolboy and having a fruit machine on my desk made out of Meccano, a marvellous way of people pouring pennies, sliding them down the desk lid. And then later on, I thought I would introduce Conkers. I thought I understood that if you baked a Conker overnight in the oven, they were harder, so they would win more fights. But my Conkers all were softer, so it meant people bought more Conkers off me. I tried to sell London taxis to New York. That didn't work very well. But those were early days.
Do you think you are a natural-born entrepreneur?
I don't even think of that word, entrepreneur. If you see something that needs doing, just do it. I mean, that's how you feel about stuff.
And for you, some of those were failures. There were many successes. How do the failures affect you?
Well, if I move on to Piper Times, which originally started as a consultancy about new business concept development, that's what we called it, and it worked for large corporations. And in the course of that, the problems of large corporation life struck us, and the idea that consumers and customers got left out of the whole equation. But we didn't think about it in those terms. It just was blindingly obvious. One of the early things we thought we'd do on our own without having a client was Pitcher & Piano. And that was just at a time when women drank wine and went to wine bars, men drank beer and went to pubs. And that seemed like nonsense. And so it was just a nice place to go, have a drink, enjoy yourself, and there'd be both men and women there. And we'd be home from home. Which it was. What struck us is the first night we just asked all our friends to come. On the second night, I thought I'd better go and have a look, and it was full. And I didn't know anybody there, so I talked to some customers who said, oh, well, a friend of a friend of a friend of mine was here last night and told me I must come. And it made me realize how quickly good news gets around. But the same is true about bad news. That is, when people really don't like something, they walk away very quickly. So much later on, we tried something called the Big Dipper, which was going to be chips in mayonnaise or whatever kind of dip you wanted. And some clever clogs in Piper said, oh, no, you need a much bigger range of products, so call it the Big Dipper instead of Dipper Chip. So we tried that and we opened number one. And I remember going in the first week and standing there and it was empty. And you look at customers, the few who came in, their eyes just didn't register at all. That you could see this was going nowhere. So we shut it, stopped. I think it lasted for all of a month.
So that was a good example of failing quickly.
I think in general, if you are in touch with what's going on there, you know things are failing quickly. Doesn't mean there'll be brilliant successes either quickly. Things may take time to burn, to come alive, but they have a life. You can see that things are going on there. You can see that in customers' eyes that they're intrigued. They kind of want to explore how it's relevant to them. So I'm quite happy about being patient, but when things are dead from a customer point of view, you know, horribly quickly, that they just say, get it, this is irrelevant.
We worked together for 12 years, and the thing that always struck me is how much you like observing customers.
Well, it's true. I could almost say observing people, just observing what people are doing, why are they behaving like that, what's going on in their heads. It's just fascinating. And the extraordinary thing in so many businesses is they don't seem to be intrigued at all. It's almost as if customers are an irritation to their normal productive life, whereas it inherently, from day one in Piper, our interest has always been about what's going on in consumers' minds. What are they thinking about this? So it didn't really make any difference whether we were talking about consultancy operations or our own operations or private equity operations. The same issues always emerge. That is, what really is going on in customers' minds here?
Do you think that a lot of founders don't listen to customers or care about customers enough?
True founders are instinctive about how things affect them, and they assume that lots of other people feel the same way as them. And if they're right, that you'll find out pretty darn quick. But if they're wrong, it's just a private obsession. You'll find out that too, and it'll fail. I think it's fundamental that any founder starts with how he feels. What's his instinct telling him or her about what would be better in the marketplace? And if you haven't got that, then you're floundering around with just intellectual ideas, you know, which is just not good enough.
And having that echo chamber can help at the beginning, when you're appealing to people like yourself as a founder. I guess our observation at Piper is, as a business scales and you attract new types of customers and you broaden the appeal of the brand, does it become even more imperative to have to speak to customers and understand customers?
Yes. It becomes more disciplined because as you grow, it's mighty easy for the business to push customers off the list. Always the measures in a business are probably a year or so after the feelings in a business and the quality of issues. Well, that's sensible, isn't it? Because how could a measure possibly be preceding how people are feeling? But you won't have a measurement of how they're feeling. So things will start to happen. And then a year later, you'll go, ooh, that's going in the right direction, or the wrong direction.
So there's a lag.
There's always a lag.
So you can still think things are going really well, where actually things are falling apart without you knowing.
I think this is really important, especially as businesses grow. It's very easy to start thinking, oh, it's all going fine. And because you've become quite big, changing direction or putting things right becomes quite tricky. It's not as easy as when you're just starting up and you say, right, I'm going to change this tomorrow. But in a larger business, well, you're not going to change tomorrow. There's a whole bunch of other people that need to get on board with you too. And it's going to take time.
It seems like a good moment to talk about 7-17-70 as you're talking about change. So this is something we at Piper talk about a lot with brands. This is the inflection points where businesses need to change. Whether it be a 7 million, 17 million, 70 million, or that could be a number of people, or it could be a number of sites. Businesses just need to think about how their brand building strategy has to change, how the people need to change, their processes, systems. Where did that come from?
I think observation of both things that we were operating here or consulting on or observing, it just became apparent how there were very different kinds of behavior in organizations as they grew. That what made for a good startup was different from what made it a good middle ground, and was different again from when it became almost a public company. And the attitudes of people were quite different. And you needed to accommodate and recognize those changes and prepare for them, not just assume that this is more and more and you just put your foot harder on the accelerator. That isn't going to happen. You need to change gear. And 717-70 seemed like a nice way of encapsulating all of that and relevant to all the people we were trying to back at that time. It was the sort of thing they could absolutely understand. It's not a cloud cuckoo land sort of idea. It's kind of, oh, I get it. And likewise, we went on to think about, well, what really is the point of this brand? And we thought, well, if it isn't better and different, then why would anybody bother? Why would a customer come near it if it isn't a better idea or if it's different from what already exists? I mean, it's not as if we've suddenly reinvented something incredibly clever. It's just blindingly obvious. So it became a part of our kind of dogma of how we go about thinking about things and how we like to talk to founders about stuff.
And it's interesting, you know, better and different feels like very normal words to describe why you should win over the competition. But actually, it's something we use on a daily basis with founders, and it resonates really, really strongly. And I think it's because it's so simple.
That is the point. It's just, well, isn't that common sense? And everybody goes, well, yes, it is really. Let's think about things in exactly that context. And it became fairly clear early on, and I think that was pre the investment work, how some businesses really needed to create a legend. And I remember very clearly when Pitcher & Pano was on the point of appointing its own managing director to take it on from its initial bunch of sites. And I said to him, we need to make this bar a legend. I wasn't saying it in any kind of clever clothes way. I'm just saying that's the point of it. It needs to become a legend. And then I outlined for him exactly what a legend would mean by that. And I never thought a legend was anything special. It just seemed like common sense. And yes, this bar needs to be a legend so people talk about it. Not they don't talk about it. And that's where legend came from. It's just another way of talking about common sense.
And clearly at Air Piper, we've taken on that phrase brand legend. And that resonates so strongly with founders. Mm. And I think it's because it's aspirational. You know, everybody wants to create a brand legend. Wow. It's something that will exist in 20, 30, 40, 50 years' time. And not many brands survive for that long. Yeah. But ultimately, it's what you said. A legend is something that people talk about and spread to others without having to rely on digital marketing or other types of advertising. And a legend really relies on people being able to orally communicate the brand story clearly.
Yes. It means they can say what it means to them and why they like it as a customer so that it has a role for them. I mean, a loaf of bread is a legend. It has a life through all time and will have a life through all time. It doesn't need to be replaced by some other thing altogether. There may be different forms of bread, but a piece of bread is a really good idea. How things are in a particular time in society may change, but these fundamental things don't really change very much.
That, I guess, is a big part of 717-70, bringing in people, the right people at the right stage. How hard is that?
Bringing in new people is mightily risky. And one of the things that's important is to recognize that if it doesn't work, deal with it. Don't pretend that it's going to work, get on with it and change it around. Everybody will be happier. It's generally true that recruiting from within is better, that people understand more about what's happening if they have been there already. The cultural elements in a business, how it feels to be there, is really important to all the staff, and it's really important to all the customers. They get it. They don't need to look at a checklist. They get it. It's mighty difficult for new people to get it because they'll bring baggage with them by definition. They'll bring a CV, and the CV is going to look impressive. So you can be fooled.
Have you seen businesses not get to their potential because they haven't been able to bring in the right people?
I think I've seen plenty of situations where the business is bringing in the wrong people, and then you watch the business wither as a result, because those new people, earnest and good meaning, there they are, they just don't get it, or they don't get where the business really ought to be going. They just don't get it. So however hard they work, they're going to be pushing in the wrong direction.
Have you, as a founder, ever felt it challenging to let go?
The funny thing is, no. And I can't quite put my finger on that, because it's a question that a lot of people ask. How do you move on from founding? How was it moving on from Pitch and Planner? How was it moving on from Piper? And for whatever reason, it just seemed completely obvious rather than emotionally or tied in. And I can see that's not always the case for other founders. I don't honestly understand why they find it so difficult, why they think the business can only survive with them, because that's a terrible route. You know jolly well it's not going to work like that. The business has to move on, and it has to be able to leave them behind.
Our observation is that lots of founders love the idea of being a CEO. Do you think that the natural role for a founder is actually potentially is in other parts of the business?
I think the role for a founder is not so much in other parts of business, but to be CEO, but to think of his or her succession. Not that you are the only person who's incapable of being a CEO, but the job of the CEO is to work out what it's like to move from 7 to 17. That is the job, and that's the real challenge for a good founder. How can I move this organisation on so the next generation can take it to the next stage? Some founders, a few, can definitely adapt as they go. But I think our assumption should always be that a business is going to need to go through those gear changes. And a founder needs to think about how he is going to ready the business for going through those gear changes. If in the course of that, it turns out that actually he can make the gear changes, well, fine. But some hang on for dear life. They just can't do that.
What's interesting, I think, about growing brands is that they are like living creatures, almost like children. And yes, we use that analogy quite a lot, don't we, around the stage of investment that we at Piper get involved in, which is at that adolescence phase, and we help them grow into adulthood. But if you nurture brands in the wrong way, they will experience growth pains. And a lot of that has to do with the speed of growth and getting that right, where if you grow them too quickly, you know, they will experience those growth pains. If you grow them too slowly, you get the challenges around loss of culture, loss of purpose. How do you think about growing brands and getting that right?
Well, I think, Yasha, you're going to have to find a new word to replace brand, because I think it's wonderfully misunderstood all over the place. It used to be, yes, I'm going to create a brand legend. Well, that meant I'll have a new logo. Well, what a load of rubbish. And like currently, marketing for most people means how do you sell, whereas proper marketing means I'm in love with customers and finding out what they're doing. And out of that comes some sort of a strategy for the business. But these words are wonderfully misused by most people in most businesses. So when you say I'm going to create a brand legend, I'm not sure most people really, really know what that means. It's more like a story of the whole business. It explains why it's relevant to people who are reading the story and hearing it, and what impact it has on their life.
And going back to when you tried to raise money for Pitch and Piano and you went out to investors, did you talk about this as a brand? Did they get it?
We never used the word brand at all. We just said, here's a place in the marketplace that we think this will be a really good idea to do. And people got it.
When Piper pivoted to becoming an investor and the mantra was around helping founders grow great brands, brand legends, was that very unique that an investor was talking about investing in brands?
Our original intent in setting up a fund was unique. Even potential investors found that hard to get their heads around. Why on earth would I put money into this so that you can find opportunities to back? And if we hadn't had things like Pitch and Piano or Loft, which would have been an early version of eBay, but was 10 years ahead of its time, so it failed quite quickly. But because we had concrete examples on the ground to show investors, they could trust us enough to say, okay, I'll give this a go. But they didn't really know what the hell they were doing. I can remember drawing on a tablecloth in a restaurant what the whole idea was for a large institutional investor. And he still stared at this drawing on the tablecloth to try and understand what all this was about. And he goes, well, I've really got it, but here's a few million, we'll put it instead. So he did. That's how we began.
What we've noticed is that over the years, lots of people gone into investing in brands because it's quite sexy.
Yeah.
And it's something you can talk about at dinner parties and people engage in it rather than a B2B business. And lots of people have failed or found it really difficult to invest in brands because it's not an easy sector to invest in. And one of the things that we've definitely noticed is that the way that people invest in brands is not right for their type of business models. And that people have tried to apply a kind of hockey stick type techie growth strategy to businesses that have people and stock and warehouses, where it's just too difficult to grow those businesses really quickly, and they just fall over and the customer experience drops away. There are natural growth patterns and there's a natural pace to growing certain types of businesses, isn't there?
I think people in businessy organizations have learned the kind of technology of business rather than obsession with customers. So they're good at the balance sheet, or they're good at the technology, or they're good at a computer that controls stock. When I first worked for Rolls-Royce Aero Engines, they were really delighted with the first big computer system to control stock in the world. And this enormous computer system was called Magpie. Most things had those kind of names stuck on them. But down on the shop floor where people were doing the work, magpie meant machine automatically generating paper instead of engines. It's a great description of exactly the difference between what's going on in the boardroom and what's going on the shop floor. And they don't talk to each other enough.
And going back to what we were talking about earlier about what brand legend is, a legend is something people can tell other people about really simply. And then that person will tell the next. And it gets passed down over a really long period of time.
Yes.
And legends inherently take a long time to be created. You can't fast track brand creation. And what we've seen in the market in terms of how founders have tried to grow brands really quickly from A to Z in 3 years is not the right approach to growing a true brand legend.
But I think what has been festering in the mind of a founder long before they started, I think, is what is this idea that keeps banging around in my head? And they would have been worrying and fretting about it for, say, 3 years before they've even done anything. And when you come to fruition, you will know relatively quickly that you have a role. This thing is capable of growing. It's not just dead from the neck up. It's just like plants. You know when you plant a seed, some plants grow, and you know that some plants just won't grow.
And you talk about the customer need.
Yes.
The businesses you've been closely involved with, I think, all have that customer need, whether it be Turtle Bay or Flatiron, which you're chairman of, or Loungers, which you're chairman of. They all had a customer need.
Yes. In my world, that's where you start. What is the need that these other people aren't answering that gives you the opportunity to be better and different? And if you can't articulate that, and if you don't know what it is that makes you better and different, and you don't see what that need is, then good luck. But preferably not with our money or any kind of support from Piper. They won't get it.
Have you noticed that the type of founder has changed over the decades you've been working with founders?
Well, I think founding a business has become kind of fashionable. The trouble is that doesn't mean there's lots of unfulfilled needs in the marketplace for people to be founders of. I think people become kind of desperate to create something that appears different, but actually, from a customer point of view, they go, I'm really not that bothered about it. And musicians and designers are a really good example of that. They're desperate to create something where the design is new. And you go, but what was wrong with the old design? Well, I don't know, but then here's a new interpretation. Well, is it better? Is it an improvement? Is it different? And because of the kind of desperation to be a founder, there's also desperation to do something new when maybe the marketplace is saying, I'm not so bothered about that right now.
And what do you think is the role of a great investor?
I think the biggest single thing is to help a business to ready itself for 1770. This is the inevitable part of growing a business. And for any founder, it's one of the toughest things to recognize. And in particular, succession and letting go that you mentioned earlier is one of the hardest things, unless you become aware of it early on and you go, I need to get my head around that and start, I need to prepare for this. If it comes as a crisis, then God help you. But if it's something you can manage over time, then that becomes really worthwhile. And at the same time that Piper is helping you to prepare for those changes, they're helping to turn the business into its own kind of legend so that people outside the business understand exactly what this thing is for as well. And the two go hand in hand and should do. That's exactly Piper's role going forward, I believe.
And on a personal level, do you think you've got one more business in you?
No comment.
Has your risk appetite changed over the years?
I never understood or even had heard of the word risk until I met Chris Curry as a banker and he talked about risk. It never occurred to me. It doesn't sit naturally with me.
This is the difference between you and I would say 99% of people, and is the reason why you've started lots of successful businesses.
Well, Yasha, I think you'll have to be the judge of that because you've met many more founders than I have. Maybe most people do think about risk.
Are you scared of failing in a business venture?
No. If it seems worth doing, it's worth doing. You'll learn pretty quickly whether it was worth doing or not, and whether it's worth pursuing, or whether you should up sticks and give up, but otherwise, get on with it.
And finally, I know how much you love threes. What would be your three things that you would say to a young founder starting a brand right now?
Well, I'm not sure about number three, but I'm bloody sure about number one and two. That is, have a really good instinct about the market. And secondly, relish the difference in other people and how to absorb all those differences into what you're trying to do. I think to be able to work with a team of different kind of approaches is the foundation.
Maybe the third one is be better and different.
That'll do.
Thank you very much, Crispin. It's been an absolute pleasure.